Chapter 10. Captain Jaggery strode across the room and from the wall removed the portrait of his daughter. Affixed to its back was a key. With this, he unlocked the gun safe, and in a moment he and Mr. Hollybrass were by the door, ready. The captain held two muskets and had two pistols tucked into his belt. Mr. Hollybrass was similarly armed. Terrified by the response my words had caused, I simply stood where I'd been. The captain would have none of that. "Miss Doyle, you're to come with us."
"But..."
"Do as I tell you," he shouted. "There's no time for delay." He flung one of his muskets to Mr. Hollybrass, who miraculously caught it, then grabbed me by an arm and pulled me after him. We ran out along the steerage into the waist of the ship, then quickly mounted to the quarterdeck. Only then did the captain let me go. He now grasped the bell clapper and began to pull wildly, as though announcing a fire, while shouting, "All hands! All hands!" That done, he held his hand out to Mr. Hollybrass, who returned the extra musket to him. I looked about, not knowing what to expect, save that I truly feared for my life. Then I realized that the ship appeared to be completely unmanned. Not a sailor was to be seen anywhere, aloft or on deck. The sails hung like dead cloth. The wheel was abandoned. The rigging rattled with eerie irrelevance. The Seahawk was adrift. The first person to appear below us was Mr. Keach. Within seconds of the bell sounding, he came bolting from below, took one look at the captain and Mr. Hollybrass, armed above him, and stopped short, then turned as if expecting to see others. He was alone.
"Mr. Keach," the captain cried out to him, "where do you stand?"
The second mate turned back to the captain, a look of panicky confusion upon his face. But before he could respond or act on the captain's question, the rest of the crew burst from beneath the forecastle deck with wild, blood-curdling yells. The crew's first appearance was fierce enough, though almost grotesquely comical, the nine of them looking like so many beggars. When I'd seen them on the day we went to sea, they seemed unkempt. Now they looked destitute, their clothing torn and dirty, their faces unshaved, their expressions contorted with fear and fury. Of the nine, only Zachariah was not armed. The rest were. Some carried pistols. I recall two having swords. Dillingham had an ancient cutlass in hand, Barlow a knife. Hardly had they flown out upon the deck than they perceived the captain standing on the quarterdeck, one musket pointing directly at them, the other leaning against the rail within easy reach. They stopped, frozen. If they had rushed forward, they might have overwhelmed the three of us. But it was now Captain Jaggery and the muskets that held them in check. With a start, I realized there was a tenth man standing below us. He was muscular and stocky, with a red kerchief tied around his neck and a sword in his hand. As I looked at him in astonishment, I saw that he had but one arm. I recalled Zachariah's tale of the sailor the captain had so severely punished, the man whose arm was so beaten it had to be amputated. Standing before us was Cranach himself. It was his face I had seen in the top cargo, the stowaway. I gasped. Captain Jaggery stepped swiftly to the rail and spoke.
"Ah, it is Mr. Cranach," he said boldly, holding his musket aimed directly at the man's burly chest. "I wondered where you'd gone. Not to hell, as I'd hoped, but here. May I," he went on with heavy sarcasm, "be the last to welcome you aboard the Seahawk."